Welcome to the Latter Gay Stories Podcast, the show that features real people, real stories, and real talk. This is the intersection of sexuality and reality. Now, here's the voice of the show, Kyle Ashworth.
Thank you for joining us on another episode of Latter Gay Stories Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Ashworth, and grateful to bring another episode for you today. The Latter Gay Stories Podcast is your opportunity to better understand the intersection of sexuality and reality, where it meets at the intersection of LGBTQ Avenue and LDS Street. We are grateful to have you along for the ride today. If you want to financially support the Latter Gay Stories Podcast, there are two simple and easy ways to donate. You can log on to our website at lattergaystories.org and click on the Donate tab, or you, if you're Venmo friendly, you can make a Venmo donation at Latter Gay Stories. The Latter Gay Stories Podcast is a good opportunity to bridge the gap between the LDS and LGBT communities in understanding the stories of individual people. In 2017, Elder Russell M. Ballard at BYU spoke about the importance of understanding and listening to the LGBT experience. The interesting part about that message from Elder Ballard was that we weren't invited to understand the experience from someone who wasn't gay or someone who wasn't somewhere on the LGBT spectrum to explain what it was like to be LGBT, but to hear the stories directly. And today's episode is exactly that. You'll have an opportunity to hear directly from a married couple who share their journey through being closeted, understanding what it looks like to move forward in life, understanding what authenticity and honesty feels and looks like, coming out, eventually getting married, and their future together. We are excited to have on the podcast Debbie and Amy Bean. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Really excited to have you. Not often do we get to hear the stories of lesbians. Often we get the individual stories, but a married couple is really exciting. And especially one that has backgrounds in Mormonism a good family background. So I'm excited for today's episode.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, so thank you for giving us a few minutes of your time at least. And we'll end up taking about an hour or so. So you're with us. To start, let's start with you, Debbie.
Okay.
Let's talk a little bit about your journey. At what point did you realize, I think I might be a little different than everybody else?
So, I grew up in the church, and I would say that for the most part, it was something that wasn't even on my radar. I assumed that my experiences were the same as everybody's experiences. But I would say the first time that I may have had some sort of an inkling that I might have been a little different was probably middle school, high school. But I don't know that I had any words to describe what I was experiencing, or I certainly didn't know anybody that was gay. I didn't know anybody, at least I didn't know that I knew anybody that was gay. I couldn't place my finger on exactly what it was that was different about me. I didn't date hardly at all in high school, college, like my young adult years. And I just kind of assumed that, well, maybe I'm just a late bloomer. Maybe I'm just, maybe not that interested in dating. And then was single for a long time. And that was an interesting challenge, being Mormon and single up into my early 30s. And then it really wasn't until I met Amy that I realized, oh, I am in love with this woman. And okay, now looking back and thinking about the things that have happened in my life and different people that I interacted with, I'm like, oh yeah, I kind of had a crush on this girl when I was 13, and I kind of had a crush on this teacher, or I kind of had a crush on, all of these different people that I never would have noticed, because it was something that was there aren't really Mormons that are gay. There aren't really people that are gay. It's just, maybe they have same-sex attraction, or maybe they struggle with this. And so it was something that I never could have embraced because I didn't ever entertain the thought. I would say that probably at some points it crossed my mind, but I'd always just push it to the side. No, that's not what it is. I'm just focused on my schooling, or I'm just focused on getting into my career, or whatever.
So. Yeah, it's interesting. You bring in the old same-sex attraction, which is very, very Mormon.
Yes.
Amy, what was your experience like? At what point did you realize, I might not be like everyone else? One of these things does not belong here.
One of these things is not like the other. My story's pretty different from Debbie's. I had a steady boyfriend through high school. I didn't date a whole lot when I went to BYU, Idaho. I served a mission. And then when I came home, I continued schooling at BYU, Idaho, and dated a lot. I finished school and then moved to Utah and dated a lot of guys. I never felt fully myself. I was doing what was prescribed by the church, and doing everything right, but I never felt joyous. I never felt like I was fully living who I was, but I don't know that I could have put a name for what I was experiencing and things like that. I grew up here in Boise and didn't know any gay people until just very recently. After I came out, I was recognizing that there were a lot of individuals from my high school who would Facebook me and say, we have a very similar characteristic, so that they put it. And so I never struggled with it as far as suppressing and hiding it as a child or as a young adult. But it wasn't until I met Debbie that I recognized that I fell in love with this person, and there was a connection that I never felt with any of the guys that I dated. And there was one particular instance that I remember sitting on my bed and praying to Heavenly Father that this would not turn into a lesbian relationship, because I knew, prescribed by the church, that if it did, that I would never be able to have contact with her again, and that broke my heart. And as I was sitting there and I prayed these things, and I just was like, okay, I turn it over because I don't know what else to do. And and it eventually did, and kind of getting ahead of the story, but I remember that was probably the first time that I had ever put those words to what I was feeling, because I'd never experienced that before.
In both of your situations, and maybe Debbie, we can start in your perspective, was there ever let's talk a little bit about what it was like church-wise with religious pressure. Mm-hmm. Did you feel like you had an ability to express yourself well, that there was self-care, that you could acknowledge those feelings? Or was there a feeling of repression and not fully understanding what that experience was like?
I wouldn't say that there was a conscious repression, but I would say that before I ever realized that I was gay, there was a conflict with the church because I was kind of othered by being single and being an adult who was single.
Almost perpetually single.
Yeah, perpetually mm-hmm. single.
For a very long time.
Yeah, yeah. And the prescribed path is you graduate from high school, you maybe go on a mission, you do some schooling, but really, especially as a woman, you get married and you have babies. And I knew from, pretty early on that wasn't going to be my path. I didn't know what my path was going to be, and I didn't know what to expect And, you know, I think about it now and I'm not sure how I envision my life, but I could never have envisioned my life as good as it is right now. And I don't know if I've answered your question, but
no, I think the important part. So we'll hit Amy's side first, and then
what was the question?
Feelings of repression. Did you feel like? And I'm just curious. Not a leading question at all, but I'm just curious if there ever was in your brain or in your experience a feeling that, had the church not been involved in my life, I could have explored or I could have been more comfortable with who and what I was? Or did you feel like you did have free rein to self-expression and understanding about yourself?
I didn't. I felt oppressed. I felt like there were certain things that I needed to be, even from a young age, as far as, I mean, and completely separated from, like, being gay, it was more from the standpoint of you need to learn how to be independent. You need to learn how to be, but you still need to want to desire to be a mother. And all of those things that are connected to the belief of who an individual is in the church, and I didn't necessarily fit all of those molds. And then when I was in the singles ward and things like that, and just that amount of you need to date. If you are not in the right place, then you are not going to meet the right person. And so I lived in Utah, and that was the most miserable experience for me. I can't speak for other people whatsoever, but from my experience living in that situation was horrific to my emotional being. So the oppression came from more of the standard of the expectation of who I was supposed to be, and I didn't really feel like I could search out and find different things to figure out what I really, who I really was.
And how did that translate into your mission? You know, you served a mission.
I did.
Not to throw stereotypes into missions, but often you hear that women who often serve missions, well, the old joke was, well, they can't get married, so send them on missions, which I think is detrimental on its face and in its reality. But did you see the mission as an opportunity to progress your individual spirituality, or was your sexuality did it factor into your mission at all? Was there any play there?
I didn't fully recognize that I was gay at that point. So I very similar to what you were just expressing, I was preparing to, I mean, that big 21, I recognized, okay, I have this date that's coming up. I choose to actively be a missionary versus have this passive aggressive, well, I'm going to go. So even though in my brain I had that same thought process of, well, I'm not married and so I'm going to go, but it was more verbally that I expressed to other people, no, that's what other people think. I am choosing this because I want to go, which may or may not be really truly the case. Mm-hmm. I went and I knew that I made my family proud, and sexuality was not part of things. And then I came home, and actually recently I recognized that I may not have been fully supporting the church, or because I recognized that I would leave church on Sunday to go work to earn money for my mission. So that whole thought process was very construed and very contradictory almost.
Well, you did it. I mean, you were working for the great reason, leaving church to go work to serve your mission. I just left church to go to 7-Eleven. So at least yours was a noble cause.
I would say hi on the way.
Or but, thanks for wherever you work, because yeah. If you were anything in the fast food industry on a Sunday morning.
Burger King. Yeah.
Yep, a Whopper with zesty sauce. Mm-hmm. Guilty yeah. on every
Many
Sunday.
Many Sundays.
So you come home from your mission. Let's approach it now. Both of you went to college. Mm-hmm. And that is often a time of self-exploration, freedom. You let your hair down a little bit. Mm-hmm. Any remarkable experiences, noteworthy experiences that happened during college?
I went to BYU, Idaho, so no.
Oh, so definitely not.
No.
Well, I went to, Rick's College when it was still Rick's, and then Utah State. So I was in Mormonville, and I was still very, very in the church. Mm-hmm. We're going to go play Ultimate Frisbee, or we're going to go, play games with our home evening brothers or whatever like that. I mean, it was a lot of fun, and I had a really good time in college. But I didn't have significant relationships at all. And I didn't have, there were people around me, they're all getting married. They're all, going into their next steps of life. And, in a lot of ways I felt like I kind of was left behind a little bit. Which now I can recognize, the reason why I wasn't dating was because I was gay. It's because, and I wasn't looking for a woman. And so, I didn't necessarily do much, self-exploration in that way, because, if the thought came into my mind, or if, someone asked me, you think maybe you're gay? Like, no, that's not possible, and things like that. And now I realized, not so much in college, but a little bit after college, there were a few times when people asked me, are you a lesbian? Are you gay? And I'm like, no, I'm just alone. I'm just single. And at that time I believed it. I don't think that I was consciously repressing it. It just was something that, until I found the right person, it didn't matter. It didn't matter whether I was gay or straight. I was alone.
This is an interesting topic, because I've actually ran into a couple people who, as we discussed, mixed orientation marriages. Mm-hmm. They got into marriages where the church's prescribed method is no sex before marriage. Mm-hmm. They got into their relationships, sealed the deal over the altar in the temple, honeymoon night. They scratched their heads and they're like, "Well, that didn't work as well as I thought it was going to work." Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then a couple months into the relationship, they realize, "I'm cut from a different cloth. This isn't me." And I've had this discussion on both sides of the aisle, both men and women. Mm-hmm. There's an interesting, so I understand what you're saying here. Like, there's an interesting experience that happens when you start having feelings for someone. You don't know what you don't know.
Yeah. Right.
And then when you figure something out, it can change your whole world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Amy, what was college life like? BYU, Idaho.
Yeah, BYU, Idaho. I'm a big kid at heart. So we would have water fights, and we would my friends and I would play. And I don't know how we got anything accomplished those first couple of years of school. The first year, I was still dating the boy that I was dating in high school, and then we broke up. He left on his mission, and then I didn't date much and didn't really recognize that it was because I was gay, but because that term just never entered my mind. Like, we were told that gay people were bad, wrong, deviant, next to child molesters, and I certainly wasn't that.
A contagion on society.
A contagion, yeah. Yeah.
And those were not our quotes. Those were quotes from church leaders.
Right. Yeah.
Those were quotes from apostles and prophets who spoke the mind and will of God.
Of God, yeah.
Yeah.
So relatively, you both had normal experiences in college. Mm-hmm. And I think that's actually notable. Those yeah. who are, might listen to this podcast who are closeted in college, in high school, and say, ah, well, to be gay doesn't mean you have a abnormal experience.
Yeah. Right.
That just normal experiences, hanging out, having fun, enjoying college life, is as typical for a person on the spectrum as it is not on the spectrum, straight or non-straight
right.
person.
Right, yeah.
So we fast forward through college. I want to get to the parts where you two finally acknowledge who and what you are.
Good, because that's my favorite part.
Yeah, and get to this point. There is no reason to delay it, because when I met you over a year ago at an affirmation conference, it was like, boom. What has happened to these two?
Oh, man. Yeah, I remember that first one. That was terrifying. Do you want to take lead?
Sure. So I moved. So I had been living in Idaho Falls, and I moved to Utah to work on a graduate degree. And I had been teaching when I was in Idaho Falls. I was trying to get out of teaching. And then the reality set in of, well, I have to have some sort of a job in order to be able to pay for graduate school. And so I found a job at a charter school. That happened to be where Amy worked. I always joke around that she hired me. And so I interviewed at this job and ended up working there. And it was like, you know, when I started working there, we were instant best friends. Like within a week or two of meeting, it was like, this is my new best friend. I always want to be next to her, and she's just amazing. And we would, you know, just talk, and we were like very close very quickly. Do you want to take it from
there? Yeah.
So Amy's version is like, oh my gosh, there was this crazy lady.
Not quite. So backing up just a little bit, I had dated a lot of guys, and had some experiences that put me in some positions that I was emotionally hurt pretty significantly. So I swore off dating, and because of some of the relationships with friends that I had, I almost even swore off being friends with people. I just, no one's, I owned a home, I rented out rooms, and I taught school and did that and was a landlord and all of that stuff. I was just really trying to protect myself. And then there was one fifth grade teacher that was leaving, and so there was a position that was opening up at the school that I was working for. And at the time, the principal said, I want you and this other fifth grade teacher to interview so that we can make sure that the personalities connect. And so we had interviewed a bunch of people, and then
I don't think that's what she meant, though. That we would connect quite as much as
oh,
we
no. Definitely not. So we had been interviewing for the full week, and then my boss said, okay, there's one person that I want you to interview. And I had my clipboard, I had, you know, and I was wearing my jacket and my high heels, and I marched down there and sat through this interview, and I knew exactly what I was looking for as a teacher by that point in a coworker, and I just rattled them off. Like, so what is your, what are you good at? What are you not good at? What would you bring to this position, and things like that? And I always joke just a little bit. She intimidated me, because she was so smart, and she was, still is, very math and science strong, whereas I wasn't. And so it was like, okay, this person would be awesome for our team, because she would bring in the things that I couldn't do and that my other coworker, Lisa, couldn't do. So after the interview, I literally ran up the stairs. My classroom was on the second floor, ran up the stairs and ran down the hall and emailed my boss. And I said, I want her on my team. And she goes, oh, good. I already hired her. I just wanted you to meet her. And I'm like, what? And that was at the end of the school year. And then we went through the summer. And then as soon as the planning and all of the professional developments that happened with teachers, we started connecting and we started planning. And then our first hangout, mm-hmm. really our first date, was like at Zupa's, and we went and had lunch. And then as soon as school started, we would go and get milkshakes or smoothies before Debbie would go to class. I'm like, oh, this is just what friends do.
And I want to explore that position because you're not dating.
No.
No, at least we didn't know we were.
You're not even out to each other. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Good. Or to ourselves.
Continue.
Not at all. It was just so fun.
Yeah. And we just really enjoyed being around each other.
We'd just talk and talk and talk. And it was fantastic.
Yeah. And then somebody moved out of your house. And she had mentioned to me, oh, so I've got this roommate that's moving out. You should move into my house. And the house that I was living in Utah was very, cold, if you will. There were other women that were living in the house, and I was not used to not being friends with my roommates. And, you know, it was this situation of like, yeah, we all kind of just coexist, and I don't really even know the people that are living here. And then, there was this moment, I guess, that when I needed to drive up to Idaho because my grandmother had died and I was going to her funeral, and there was the worst snowstorm ever. It's like September, maybe October, and like horrible, horrible snowstorm. And you know, I'm driving along and I can't see the side of the road. I'm like, I would pull off, but I'm afraid that I'd end up in a ditch. And I'm driving along and I'm having this thought while I'm driving that if I never was to go, like, if I were to die doing this, my roommates that I was living with would not even notice that I wasn't there. And I was like, I can't live this way. And so when I got home, I called Amy and I was like, I want to move in. And I started packing that day. And it was about the end of October that I moved into her house. So, you know, we'd only been working together for, 2 months, 3 months? And I moved into her house as a roommate. And the friendship continued to develop from there.
Yeah.
So.
Was that when I needed to be taken out of the hospital?
Yeah, that was really early in the, when I was living there, that she had a medical issue and had to go to the hospital, and her roommates wouldn't take her, her other roommates. And I was like, oh, I'll take you to the hospital. I took her to the hospital, and she ended up having to stay overnight for a procedure. And I stayed in the room with her. And
we've been friends for two months.
Yeah.
And this person who I didn't even know took me to the hospital, volunteered to go home and get a few things, and then come back and stay with me in the hospital and then go to work the next day. And I was floored by this individual who, like, who are you that even my friends who I've been living with for over a year wouldn't step out and help me like you are? That was a huge thing for me. I mean, it was like knocking the blocks of this wall over my heart down with each time, where it was like, I began to trust her very, very quickly.
Yeah. And then it came to be Thanksgiving, and she asked me if I wanted to come and meet her family and, you know, hang out at her house for Thanksgiving. And so I did, and we ended up,
So all of my siblings came home.
Yeah.
So I grew
home
up
to Utah.
No, home to Boise,
Idaho. Yeah. So I shared a room with my younger sister, and so when everybody came home, she was in that room, and my brother had his own room, and is my older sister there? I don't remember.
She was in the room that you had grown up in, And Ashley was living in the basement.
Was in the basement. Yeah. Right. So we were put in the
this little office,
the spare room on a futon, that was just super itty bitty.
And you know, that was like, and so we were talking one night.
This is important, I promise.
This is We were talking one night that while we were there, and she like she was crying about something that had happened, and I don't remember exactly what the situation was. And I just kind of like hugged her and just kind of held her. And it, and when we went back to our house afterward, I didn't want to be separated from her like at all. And like we would spend, you know,
we would work together.
We worked together all day. We drove to and from work together. We hung out together all evening. And then I wanted to snuggle with her in her bed at night.
And it was so bizarre because up until that point, I always thought that I was an introvert and really needed my space. Don't want people around. Like, who are you? Like, of course I want you right here with me. Where are you going?
Yeah. And still at this point, we're totally in denial about that this was anything more than just a really close friendship.
To the point that we would drive to work and it was a, 45 minute commute.
Sometimes,
in Utah. We would hold hands as support, but we were not together, and we were not gay, but we would hold hands.
Oh, yeah. What tangled webs.
Because so that's what best friends do, right?
I can count on the number of no hands that I did that growing up, and with all my coworkers.
But it was about it was another year before we recognized that we were more than friends.
Oh my! Even Ray Charles is ashamed. He could see this.
Yeah, and the first time that we kissed, Amy was terrified, and she like got up and ran into another room, like,
sat on the couch,
and like, what is going on? And
what does this mean? Because it
we're just really close friends.
Who kissed?
Yeah.
Who kiss and hold hands, who snuggle together, who live in the same house.
Yeah.
And we, everybody that we were close to, our friends, our family, all accused, and I use that word very specifically because that's what it was. It wasn't an inquiry. It was
an accusation.
An accusation. Are you a lesbian? No! Because up until that point, we hadn't done anything, and they would ask all of the questions, and we weren't involved. But as soon as we became involved,
that's
people
when we
stopped
asking questions.
And nobody knew.
Yeah. So, or at least they didn't know that they knew.
They didn't know that we knew.
Yeah. And then, so we were closeted together for, 4 years or so? Maybe five, might have been 5 years.
Yeah.
So we moved multiple times together, still under the
pretense.
Under the pretense of we're just roommates.
So you were job hunting at the same time together, trying.
Well, we were job hunting for the same job. So we would go to job fairs together, and we like it was kind of this implied we're a package deal thing. As we were interviewing and we had a few different, job offers in different places. We were looking at like getting out of Utah. I was finishing up my degree and Amy wanted to just do something different. And we were offered or all but offered jobs in, Alaska
Vietnam.
Was one of them. Yeah. And then Amy ended up getting a job in China. And she was offered the position and she got off the phone being offered the position and she was like, you have to apply and you have to go with me. I'm not going to China by myself. And so, and this was a hard thing for me because, you know, like at this time and in all of the time that we were, that we recognized that there was something more than just friendship going on between the two of us, we were in this constant struggle of, we're just going to be friends. We're just going to be good Mormon girls. We're going to, you know, we're going to go to church. We're going to do all the things we're supposed to be doing. But I don't want to lose you. I don't want to leave you. I don't want for this to end.
And multiple times we had talked about, well, if we're in a relationship, then we have to face the fact that we are dating. And if we're dating, then we have the opportunity that it could be a breakup and we could lose each other.
Yeah.
So we can't go down that road.
Yeah. We can't be dating, because if we can date, then we can break up. And if we're friends, then there's no reason why we'd have to break up.
And I struggled with the whole, well, if I love my best friend so intensely, but the church tells me that I'm wrong, that I'm deviant, that I'm all of these things that I'm not. And it didn't make any sense to me. And then I was sitting in this position for years of feeling like I had to choose. I have to choose to be happy or say goodbye to my best friend and choose to be miserable.
Well, and I think one of the things that shocked me the most when, you know, when we would kiss and when we would be cuddling together was I was struck by how much it didn't feel wrong. You know, I had always been told that, you know, homosexuality is just, it's a horrible sin, and you can't do wrong and feel right, and you can't, if you're sinning, then you're going to feel horrible. And nothing had ever felt more right and more natural to me ever in my life.
And complete and whole. Yeah, and we did that for years, flopping back and forth. And right before we left for China, we both got jobs, by the way.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
My brother got engaged and was going to be married. And I was trying to set up the time that we needed to fly out right before his marriage. So that right before his wedding, so I didn't have to face my family. And because I wasn't worthy to go to the temple at that point because we were involved. And that was devastatingly, that was so hard. That was so hard. And we couldn't, it just, the situation, I had to face it. And I, told my dad that, hey, I'm not worthy to go. And I still have my temple recommend. I could be dishonest and just walk in and avoid everything, but that's not who I am. And I said, so will you tell everybody else?
Please.
And so that was awkward. It was hard. We went to the wedding and sat in the waiting room and with my nieces and nephews, and it was really, really hard. And I had a lot of my family members, my extended family, who would talk to my immediate family and say, well, what's wrong with her and why isn't she in there? I'm like, it really isn't anybody else's business but mine and God's. But I mean, that was so hard. And then we flew out and we landed in San Francisco, and I was exhausted because we sold my house and sold everything in it. Like, we had moved everything out and it looked like a complete house, but it was sitting on on the lawn.
Uh-huh.
And had this huge garage sale, got rid of everything. Debbie had finished her final.
Yeah.
Like, what, well, a day before?
Well, technically, I hadn't had my last class. I was supposed to have presented my last project, like, the day or two after we flew out.
For China.
But I had arranged with my professor to finish up a little bit early. So, you know, we're completely just, like, in this whirlwind.
And brother got married, Debbie finishing school, sold the house, moved out, tried to figure
out planning the last things, like the night, like until 2 o'clock in the morning, the night before we were gonna fly out,
and sleeping on top of our sleeping bags. I mean, on top of our suitcases, and then we flew from Utah, and then we landed in San Francisco. And I sat on one of the benches, and I was like, I don't want to go to China.
Uh-oh. And I was like, Amy, do you want to
go back to Utah?
No. Do you want to go to China?
No.
Do you want to stay in San Francisco? No. Like, we're out of options.
And I sat there and just had a little bit of an emotional breakdown. And then we got on the plane and flew to China and had a great experience. While we lived in China, there was Chinese New Year, and so there was three weeks.
Yeah.
3 weeks in January that we didn't have school.
February,
that we didn't have school. So we went backpacking.
We went to Europe and got to travel all these amazing places.
So fantastic.
And China was just incredible, and it was really nice because we didn't have our family and friends and church people like on us, you know, and the eyes of the church on
us. We still didn't come out.
Yeah, we still weren't out, but we
there was a funny experience where, so the job provided an apartment for all of their employees, and under the guise of, so I'm diabetic and I'm able to handle it. I've been diabetic for 35 years. But I explained to the school, well, I need to have Debbie live with me for medical purposes, so that if I have a medical emergency, that Debbie would be there. So we didn't live in separate apartments. We lived in the same apartment because I was diabetic. Which would have been fine the other way too.
Well, maybe it would have been. I don't know. I mean, they're not all that accepting in China either.
That's true.
Very, very true.
But yeah.
So, and then we took a little vacation to Thailand right after we were done teaching. Flew back to China, stopped in Hawaii to celebrate my sister's birthday, and then we flew.
We came back home. So we were there for a year, and then
moved to Vegas.
We lived in Las Vegas for a year, and that was horrible.
That was awful.
And then we moved to the Boise area, and it was around this time that I started to really acknowledge that, I'm gay. It's not just a phase. It's not just that I am in love with Amy, which I was and am. I was at the time, I got a job working in wilderness therapy. So I was working with teenagers out in the Idaho desert and totally roughing it and that kind of stuff. And a big part of that was we would have these groups where we would, talk about things that were going on, and it was encouraged that the leaders, that the instructors also, be vulnerable and share at least as much as was appropriate. And the first people that I told that I was with Amy were people out in the field. They were kids. It was a group of kids. It was a group of 15-year-old boys. Mm-hmm. They were the first people that knew, or at least that I had told. And, in a lot of ways, the kind of secondhand psychological help and like counseling help that I got out in the field made it possible for me to have the courage to eventually come out. And then, I kind of sat on that for a while. But then about 2 years ago now, we started the process of coming out. We told Amy's family first, and then I wrote a letter to my parents and rewrote the letter and rewrote it again and sat on it for months and was a big chicken and didn't want to send it. And but then finally, not this past summer but the summer before, I sent it to them and started coming out to my family.
So, I think it's amazing that you're into this relationship 7 years.
Yeah.
And you just come out to yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
That says something about the fortress that we build around our experience, or the fortress we build around our perception of what we want people to see.
Yeah.
We staged that room. We staged one room for Debbie.
It was
her bedroom, but
I always slept in Amy's room.
Amy's room was
our room.
Our room.
Yeah.
Just for the perception of that. Oh yeah, fine. Everything's in the up and up, and that.
Yeah.
It. I think that is valuable to someone who listens to this podcast. That it isn't just the decision to come out and to understand that vulnerable and important part of ourselves isn't an overnight decision.
Yeah.
Right.
That it takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
And it's complex.
Well, and one of the things that, you know, when I came out to my family and, you know, different people had varying reactions and some of them were having a really hard time with it. You know, one of the things that I had to keep reminding myself was that it took 5 years of me wrestling with it from the time that I first noticed an attraction to Amy until I had really accepted that this is part of who I am and that I'm okay. It took me 5 years. And for myself, I've got to be at least that patient with my loved ones. You know, as they're wrestling with it, because I got those 5 years of knowing this and thinking about it and wondering what this was going to look like for my life. And, you know, and that whole time they just thought that we were best buddies, and or at least that's what they let on that they thought. Mm-hmm. I try to be as patient as I can be with that process, because it's something that you have when you're in the church and when you're in a lot of the conservative Christian or religious organizations. You have this set up idea of what it means to be gay or what it means to be a lesbian or what it means to be LGBTQ. And I had to break down my internalized homophobia before I was ready to even talk about it to anybody else. And for years, we were the only ones that knew. For years, we had nobody else that we could talk to about it.
That included friends.
Yeah, even our best friends. We didn't talk about it. You know?
So one of the things that keeps popping in my brain is the searching for that comfort of, okay, the church says this, I feel this. And there were many times that I knelt down and I said, Heavenly Father, I feel this way about this individual. The church tells me it's wrong, but I feel this way and I don't feel wrong. And I'm told that if I am doing something wrong, then I would feel it. Yeah. So which one's right? And the scripture that we kept on talking about, and honestly, we rely more on scripture now than we ever have been before, but the scripture that talks about by their fruits, you shall know them. And we've looked at, well, what are the fruits of our relationship? We both have experienced varying degrees of depression and anxiety. Together, they are not nearly as bad. And we are happier than we ever have been. We are more financially stable. We have dreams. We have hopes. We have a desire to
life.
Yeah, and rich. A richness that beforehand, I couldn't say that I experienced. And I feel like I am fully who I am, but it's taken a long time to get there because I had to, like Debbie was saying, had to, first of all, come to terms with it, which took us a long time.
Obviously.
Yeah. Obviously.
6 or 7 years.
For 7 years.
Of being in a relationship.
In a relationship that all we said was, oh, we're not gay. I'm just in love with my best friend. Yeah. I'm just in love
with
this
woman. Well, and even to ourselves, it was a lot of this. Well, am I gay or am I just, is it just this one person? Is it just Amy? Is it just Debbie? You know, is it, and it kind of ended up being like, well, it doesn't honestly matter, like, how we identify specifically and how we label ourselves. This is real, and this is the most positive thing I can imagine having in my life.
So you're saying you didn't get the 7-day trial experience of being gay and you forgot to cancel your subscription?
Yeah.
And therefore you were stuck?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Well, let's get to the point where someone says, will you marry me?
This is a fun story.
Well, which one?
That's why it's so fun.
Do you want to start?
Sure. When was the first time? So we have been saying for a very long time, well, I love you. Well, I love you too. Awesome. And then we had been saying for years, will you marry me?
Maybe.
I would like to.
Want to.
But it wasn't until we moved here to Idaho, and we were having a conversation, we were cuddling, and I said, well, I love you. And she said, I love you too. And then I said, well, I want to marry you. I want to marry you too. Maybe we should come out to our families.
So maybe we should tell them that we're together.
Maybe we should tell them. And then
you had all these different plans about, you know, when and how and whatever. You were scheming with one of my friends from work, and, you know,
to propose
about, you know, how you were gonna do it. And then there were all of these different times when, you know, we'd be like, will you marry me? Yes. But this isn't the real proposer. We're going to do something better. Will you marry me?
Will you marry me?
Yes.
Yes. But this, that's not the real one.
This isn't it.
I just want to tell you that I love you.
And then it was, you know, after we had come out to both of our families last summer, not this past one, but the one before, and we had gone on a trip to
New York.
And Amy was making this little piece of like twine or something like that by like twirling things together, and
let me back up. The reason why is because Debbie is very much a person of nature, and I mean, neither one of us are much for stuff, and definitely not expensive things. And so for the time being, because I didn't have a ring, I was trying to make a ring.
But I figured it out.
I figured out
that that's what she was doing. And, you know, so we're sitting in New York. We're on the Hudson River, and it's the 4th of July. And right before the fireworks were going to start, I was like, you were going to propose to me, huh? And she's like, darn it, yes, I was.
And then, during the fireworks.
And then I got down on my knee and I said, Amy, will you marry me?
Yeah, that was so awesome.
It was great.
And then, yeah.
Yeah, so then it was about a year after that that we, it was this past summer that we actually got married. We decided to wait a while to let things sink in a little bit with our families. Let them kind of get used to the idea a little bit before we actually tied the knot. And yeah, we got married this summer, and we had a very, very small ceremony. Only a few people were there, and then we had a big party and invited everybody. So,
and almost everybody and their dog.
I don't think we had that many dogs there, did we?
No.
What was your family's reaction?
Mixed responses. Some individuals were very supportive. One in particular, I said, hey, can I come talk to you? And we showed up, and he said, I said, I have something that I need to tell you. And he said, I already know. Just tell me. Debbie and I are together. And he goes, yeah, I already know. And we're going to get married. He goes, are you sure you want to do that? I said, yes, I am. Very sure.
It's taken us 9 years to get here. I'm all in.
I had one individual in my family who was less than supportive, and we have a difficult relationship to begin with. And so that was one area where I just, like, I'm not going down that road.
Yeah, you just talk about the weather with them.
Yep.
And then I had one individual in my family who, she had mentioned, well, every time that you called over the last 3 years, I was wondering, is this the phone call where you're going to come out? And she had a little bit of a difficult time just because she has a hard time with change anyway. And then my another individual screamed in the phone and she wanted to perform the ceremony, which she didn't end up doing. But, and then, yeah, so it was mixed.
And, you know, in my family, there was a pretty wide variety. One of the things from my family that I very consistently got, though, was, we love you. We love Amy. A lot of them, not sure what I think about you two being together, but we love you and we support you as people. Yeah. And, you know, and there's been some ups and downs with that, some places that were kind of rocky, and some hurtful things that were said. And, you know, and I know that my family cares about me, and I know that even the things that they've said about it that have been hurtful, they're coming from a good place. They, in their perception, they see this as that we are, that we're going down the wrong path, or that we're going to be miserable because we're together, and that you know, that this can't lead to anything happy. And so they think that they're trying to protect us by opposing it, by not being, you know, supportive. And I understand that, because I mean, I grew up in the church. I know what the church teaches about us. But it's not true. Mm-hmm. It's not true that this is just a sin, or that this is just a learned behavior or a struggle. This is a part of our identity. It's a part of who we are. And I can't imagine being any happier. Yeah. And I can't imagine a God that would want us to be lonely, and that would want us to be in the situation that each of us were in before we met each other, or to, you know, to have to leave each other, because this is so good. And I've always believed that all good things come from God. Mm-hmm. And this is the most good that I can imagine.
Yeah.
As we wrap up the last of the podcast, I wonder what advice you would have for someone who is in your shoes, who hasn't yet come out or is contemplating that decision.
I've been thinking about that for a really long time. First of all, I would say you are not alone. You are not alone. There are a lot of people out there who are like you, who feel different, who feel isolated, who feel alone. You're not alone. And I would also advise, coming out is a very personal process. Make sure that the situation is safe, that and you don't have to come out to everybody all at once. Just picking and choosing the individuals who you feel trust, that there is that trust that's been established, that choose the people individually and choose them that you know that the relationship is strong enough. And I know that it's not an easy thing. It definitely was a uncomfortable conversation with each of the family members, but I'm really glad that I did it. And it took a while for people's responses, and took a while. It was almost a full year for some of them before our relationship came back started to heal from. But that's not on me. That's the way that they chose to respond. And the thing that I kept on thinking was, well, I know that you love me, but would you truly love me if you knew everything? And I think that the just being careful about who you come out to, and that you're not a,
And you know, and I would say, you know, I'd echo a lot of what Amy had to say, was that you're not alone. This is something that a lot of people experience or have experienced, and that there is a support system if you're willing to seek it out. We were alone when we were closeted. We were alone together, but we were alone. And when we started the process of coming out, there was this rush of love, and maybe not from the biological family, but we have developed and we have built this incredible chosen family, that there is so much love and so much support, and those people are out there for people that are coming out and that are considering coming out. And it is a hard process to come out. There's no two ways about that, that it is hard. But the authenticity that you can experience once you're kind of through that, it's like the breaking of dawn. It's like the sun comes in, and all of a sudden, where there was darkness, now you start to really be in your whole self. And for me, I noticed there were so many things that I didn't realize I was hiding, besides just that I was gay, that now that I'm out and now that I am living my authentic self, that I feel like I can express all of those things and I can express my whole personhood.
It's great advice. Thank you for sitting down with us.
Yeah, sure thing.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing your story. I mean, this whole podcast episode is full of great nuggets of wisdom. Even if you delayed it for a really long time. And I'm excited for that. I'm excited for your journey. I'm happy to be able to just watch from the sidelines and see that unfold. And I wish you many, many, many more years of happiness.
Thank you.
Authenticity and honesty are pretty incredible. They do not bargain. They demand full price. You can't buy them at a discount or on the clearance rack. It requires everything, but it also gives everything. And that's the beauty of it. Again, thank you.
Thank you so much.
The Latter Gay Stories podcast is your opportunity to better understand that intersection of LGBT Avenue and LDS Street. More importantly, this episode and episodes like it give us an opportunity to build bigger and stronger bridges between the LDS and general community and the LGBTQ community. If you relate to this podcast episode, or if you have a question or even a comment about it, we invite you to make a comment below. If you are following along on one of the video versions through Facebook or YouTube, our YouTube channel, we invite you to make a comment about this episode and let us know how you feel. And if you are listening on an audio version through one of our audio podcast players, through Stitcher, iHeartMedia, iHeartRadio, Apple, or Google Play, we invite you to subscribe to this channel and give us a like and rating as well. Again, we are thankful that you joined us for this episode and invite you to share and make a comment wherever you catch this podcast episode. The Latter Gay Stories podcast is your opportunity to take an opportunity to listen to and understand, as we talked about in the beginning of this episode, listen to and understand the experience of the LGBT community. And most importantly, it's podcast episodes just like this that allow us to continue writing our Latter Gay story.
This episode is a production of Latter Gay Stories. We are always looking for new friends. Give us a like on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at Latter Gay Stories. The podcast is made possible because of generous donors like you. Your donation gives us the ability to build bigger bridges by producing more Latter Gay Stories. Want more? Find this episode and others online at lattergaystories.org.